This is Tom Parsons. I have the pleasure today to speak with Stephen Mansfield. He's the author of several books, including The Faith of George W. Bush and Ten Tortured Words, which is a wonderful book about the First Amendment to the Constitution. His latest book has already stirred some controversy, and it hasn't even hit bookshelves yet. It's The Faith of Barack Obama. And Stephen, we're looking forward to reading about this. Tell us what prompted you to write this book.
Well, you know, like you said, Tom, I wrote The Faith of George W. Bush, and I did it, yes, I'm a conservative, and yes, I was voting for him, but I also did it because I think his life at the time, to tell his story, really captured some of the religious trends, many of the major religious trends happening in our society. Now, 4 or 5 years later, Barack Obama's faith and his spiritual journey not only is shaping this election, but it also, as you tell the story and as you reflect on it, captures many of the trends that are most powerful and transforming in this age. So I guess what I'm saying is that I wrote the book because his life of faith was a prism to understand and break out the different aspects of truth in our time. And I think it's absolutely fascinating. So I wanted to spend some time explaining it to the country.
We've seen kind of a shift from where more conservative evangelicals and have voted consistently Republican, and that's kind of been the deciding factor in the election. And now we read more and more in the press about how particularly younger evangelicals are shifting more towards Democrats, towards more liberal and social causes. Is that something that you saw as you were researching this book?
Yeah, there's no question about it. For a lot of that, by the way, I think begins with the loss of the religious rights national leadership. I mean, think about the fact that 4 or 5 years ago, in Bush's second election, you would have had Jerry Falwell as a prominent voice, you would have had D. James Kennedy as a prominent voice, Ted Haggard was the president of the National Association of Evangelicals. You know, Pat Robertson would have been a respected voice probably for many. Now all that's changed. The most prominent pastors in the country, T.D. Jakes, Joel Osteen, aren't very political. Falwell and Kennedy are dead. Haggard's had a big moral failing and is compromised. Pat Roberts has been compromised by some of the things he's said, some of the statements that people are angry about that he has said. And so you really have no religious right national leadership except for maybe James Dobson. And he's been a little unusual in this election, too, first attacking McCain and Thompson in the primaries and now attacking Obama. Rather than being a bridge builder. So you have no national leadership. I think also the war, poverty, the economy, press, different moral concerns, even upon evangelicals who try to vote scripture, try to vote in terms of biblical values. And then, of course, as you said, the young are coming online. They tend to be postmodern theologically, to the extent they're theological at all, and they tend to lean leftward in their politics. So you've got really a titanic shift happening in this election that many observers aren't catching because I think it's just about Obama's individual faith. But the fact is we've got a pretty massive shift going on culturally and religiously in this country, and it just happens to be happening around the time of this election.
One of the issues that has come up in this election has been Barack Obama's church more so than it has been his faith. Talk about how you researched that and how does that play as a political issue in this campaign?
I think it could be very prominent in the general election because I think the Republicans will definitely go after Obama for Reverend Rice, for years at Trinity United Church of Christ. It's a rather confusing issue. It's a mixture. I spent a good deal of time at Trinity United Church of Christ. And I have to tell you that the sort of daily experience of the average parishioner is pretty much standard American church experience. You know, it's a big church. It's got security. It's got good people. It's, 3,000 sitting in a room at a time in a church of about 10,000. Good pastors, songs that you would recognize. But it does have a very clear African-American turning. There's a big picture of an African-looking Jesus in the foyer, for example. And more importantly, Reverend Wright is given to black liberation theology, in which he believes that Jesus identifies himself with the oppressed and is opposed to the oppressor in all political situations. And therefore, if you use the language of black liberation theology, Jesus is black. Now, that doesn't mean his skin color. It simply means that he identifies with the oppressed. And all oppressors are white. Again, not skin color. This is just the language that liberation theology uses. So Jeremiah Wright is a man who's built a wonderful church at many levels, but undergirding it is this black liberation theology that I think is going to be hung around Obama's neck in the general election and really cause causing some problems because it is very anti-American. It is. It does sound very anti-white. And the intellectual father of it, James Cone, was often spoken in very violent terms, reminiscent of the, you know, radicalism of the 60s and 70s. So I think it's going to be an interesting thing, even though if you attend that church, you easily understand what it was Obama found there and why he settled in for so many decades.
There's been great debate about whether did he, you know, go to this church for political expediency, that it helped establish his credentials in the Chicago area and forward his political career, or was it really more a matter of conviction, you know, that these are the things that he believed. Which of those camps do you land in based on your research?
Well, you probably won't be surprised, Tom, to find that I landed in both of those camps. Not trying to be Mr. Middle of the Road. I think Obama is very clear about the fact that he first went to church and began to get connected to a church, not so much out of a spiritual search, but because people he was working with in the South Side of Chicago challenged him that he would be more successful if he had some connection to church, some connection to faith. He began to shop churches a little bit. And when he went to Trinity United Church of Christ, I have no problem believing that he went because it was a big, prominent, upscale church that spoke about black empowerment and had many intellectuals and leaders in it. But I think in time, he really was captured by the gospel. And this is going to be the hard thing for a lot of evangelicals. The fact is that the Christian gospel is preached at Trinity United Church of Christ. The altar calls are very much like the altar calls that would be happening at the Jerry Falwell's church. And so I think that Obama went for mixed reasons, as we often do when we go to church initially in our lives. But then he was captured by the gospel. And I believe that, you know, when he was defending his association with Jeremiah Wright, the first reason he said he stayed was because the gospel was preached. And I have to tell you that I have no problem believing that at Trinity United Church of Christ, the core Christian gospel is preached very clearly and very powerfully. And I can see why it would capture a young biracial man who was looking for a spiritual home.
It's interesting, too, that you mentioned that this church, you know, does preach, in addition to the gospel, it does teach a lot along the lines of black liberation theology, and it seems that Obama has gone to great lengths to not paint him as himself as a black candidate, but really that he is someone who appeals to all races, kind of stepping out of the mold of other predecessors such as Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton that really played up their identity as black men in their candidacies for president.
Right.
And we've seen some conflict that's taken place between Barack as the new generation of black leadership, more or less, and these older gentlemen. Is that something that you picked up on at all, and what does that spell for the future?
Yeah, I think that Obama is a new kind of candidate who is causing some troubling thoughts to the older black leadership. First of all, he's biracial. He's Ivy League. He's been the beneficiary of the battle for civil rights in an amazing way. Remember that he's a young man raised in the home of an atheist mother who was often on food stamps, given her academic and intellectual pursuits. And yet he rose to not only become a nominee for president of the United States, but go to Harvard, Columbia. So I think that the older black leadership, quite frankly, likes to play the race card. I mean that without insult, but we see that very much with Jesse Jackson, very much with Al Sharpton. And they tend to prefer that us versus them mentality. Obama doesn't play that way. He's as much white as he is black. And that, frankly, plays pretty heavily in the African-American community. You know, you and I assume you're white, Tom. We look at Obama, we see a black man. He's got dark skin, he's got African-American features. But blacks are very aware that he's both black and white, and that just plays differently in the African-American community. So Obama is a candidate who can help bridge a lot of, you know, big divisions, but that doesn't mean he's necessarily going to play well with everybody in the African-American community, particularly the old line leadership.
You've taken a lot of heat already before this book has come out for painting what some would call a very flattering portrait of Obama. How do you respond to your critics?
Well, first of all, it's not a flattering view of Obama. I'm not opposed to having any kind of criticism. I mean, a guy can't write on the topics that I write on. and expect everybody to just be dancing in his in celebration of him. You know, I've written a positive book on Bush and a book on the Pope and a book on faith among soldiers. And, you know, for heaven's sakes, I've written on some very controversial topics. But I think what amazes me about this is that as a Christian, I've written a book about another man's faith. And I'm intrigued by his faith. I want to encourage his faith. And I believe that he's sincere about his faith. Now, people who share my political views are upset with me because I have written this book. And basically what they're saying is you're being too Christian. You should be more Republican than you are Christian. What I have written is an honest, objective evaluation that celebrates Obama's faith to the extent it can be celebrated, questions it where it has to be questioned, and basically tries to explain it in terms of our times. It's something, by the way, we need as we approach this election. And I think that it's a valuable contribution, and it certainly is not disingenuous in any way. I'm neither endorsing him or attacking him. And I have to say that one of my goals for this book, besides just the content, was to find a tone that I hope will be replicated a bit more in American politics. This vicious left-right fighting that's happening in America is paralyzing us. It's keeping us from accomplishing anything. And I'll have to say, as a Christian, it's ungodly. And so my hope was to write a book that would model a certain tone while communicating facts people need to know. The average evangelical is going to read this book and going to conclude that Obama is not an evangelical. On the other hand, a lot of Christians are going to identify with where he is, and a lot of people of faith are going to identify where he is. But regardless of whether they identify, they've got to know what he believes before they elect him to the presidency, if they do. So I don't have any problem with being criticized. I think what's bothering me is that I'm largely being criticized for not being meaner. And on that score, I just plead guilty.
And, you know, I probably get at least one email a day, if not more, from somebody that's forwarded something negative about, you know, Obama to me, something that, you know, supposedly I hadn't known.
Sure.
And it's hard to sift through where the truth and the fiction is in that, and after a while, I just delete them and don't read them, because, you know, I've already made up my mind who I'm going to vote for.
Sure.
And those things are not necessarily going to sway me, but at the same time, I'm curious to read your book. I mean, I don't necessarily intend to support him, but I'm curious to find out more about him. I want to know if this man is going to be president. I want to know more about what he believes.
Exactly. And that kind of intellectual curiosity gets slain in the passions of political fighting. I think that an honest mind, an open mind, wants to know what the man believes. For example, Teddy Kennedy is probably going to pass from this world soon. I will grieve his loss. I want to read a good book about him. He's a life that you know, has had a profound influence on our nation, and I think has its noble and its ignoble elements. But he's not of my political persuasion. I think everybody knows I'm a pro-life conservative. You know, I'm not hiding that I feel that way. But does that mean I have to hate him? Does that mean I have to dismiss his memory? I'll tell you, as a follower of Jesus, I'll have to tell you that if you axe murder my wife, if you attack my religion, if you steal my property, I still don't have the right to hate you according to the teachings of my faith. How did we get to a point where I'm supposed to hate you because we disagree politically? So mentality in our country is killing us. And I've made it very clear, I'm not voting for Barack Obama. But if I was speaking to a room of 5,000 pastors, I would say, you guys have got to understand his life to understand what's going on in this society. If I was speaking to 5,000 Republican politicians, I would say, all of you need to understand Obama's life in order to understand what's happening in our society. So that's just intellectual honesty. And how we got to a point where you can't even read a book on a guy unless you agree with it politically, I do not know, but it's not a healthy situation for our country.
No, it isn't. And I think we can look back at two passings in recent months that kind of encapsulate this. When Tim Russert passed away, there was, you know, great praise for his career all across the board, left and right. Everybody respected him. When Tony Snow passed away this past week,
yes,
there was, you know, much more criticism from the left for, you know, a guy who is equally great at what they did and should have been equally well respected. You know, regardless of whether you agree with him politically or not, you've got to respect the guy's service.
And Tom, there's another aspect of this too, and that is that Obama is a United States senator. Now, he may not be my, you know, kettle of fish, he may not be my political preference, But he is a United States senator who rose from poverty to go to Columbia and Harvard, serve the state of Illinois, and serve in the United States Senate. He bears and he warrants a certain amount of respect for me for that reason alone, because he's an elected leader in my country. And I refuse to treat him like he's some criminal just because his political views are different from mine. Now, I am passionately pro-life, and Obama is not. But that doesn't mean I hate him because we disagree. And that this tone that we're talking about right here, this issue is harming us more, quite frankly, than the differences in policy. The fact that we can't get anything done in Washington. We're facing huge crises in this country. But the political hatred keeps us from being able to get anything done. And if I don't do anything else with this book but model for some people a tone of honor and respect for an inspiring story, even for of a man that I don't agree with politically, then I still will accomplish what I'm trying to do.
Absolutely, and you're totally correct. I mean, there are plenty of reasons to admire and respect what he's accomplished, even though we may have philosophical differences or political differences. Last question for you, because I know we're running out of time.
Sure.
He's going to present an interesting dilemma for the left in terms of his faith and how that's going to play out in matters of policy. And this came up in recent weeks because he made a statement he wanted to expand the faith-based initiatives that President Bush had proposed. And he's drawn some fire from the left. Some of those that are more anti-religious believe religion should be separate from the political scene. How do you see that playing out?
Well, I have some dear friends who are very, very much on the left, and I've had a good time dogging them in the last week or two because, you know, they always were accusing me that Bush was going to sort of create a theocracy, that he wanted to create this, you know, tele-evangelist theocracy kind of thing. And I always said, no, that's not what he's doing, but he is trying to bring faith to bear on public policy. So then my far left friends find their favorite candidate. What does he do? He reinforces the same policies. So I think you're exactly right, Tom. The left, especially the secular left, is going to have a very hard time with some of what Obama does, but he's been signaling it all along. And that's why I can relate to him to some extent. He does believe that the First Amendment allows some public expressions of faith. He does believe that faith-based initiatives have a place. He does believe that people of faith should be welcome to the public square for policy debate. They just need to sort of change their language and not speak in terms of thus saith the Lord, but speak in terms of, you know, broader principles. And I think Obama is going to really rankle those who are secularists. But at the same time, there is a vast minority, I just have to say. The majority, and the increasing majority, are people who are on the left, but are faith-based. People who want to take care of the poor because it's what Jesus commanded. People who want to take care of, who want to assure a moral approach to war because it's what faith demands, not just because, you know, it arises from a secular worldview. So Obama, I think, is a unique creature in that he's so deeply Christian, intends to bring his faith to bear on public policy, but at the same time is very much on the left. So the people who are going to be most unhappy about this, you're right, are the secular leftists. But they've been in crisis for a while. You know, Tony Blair was the same way in England. In England, you know, the Labour Party was traditionally the atheist party, the party that arose, you know, from a communist influence. Tony Blair, a deep man of faith, and even more so now that he's out of office. So I think what's diminishing is a secular approach to politics. What's arising is a faith-based approach to politics. And now I think we have the opportunity in this country for the great debate between, kind of a right-leaning, limited government, low taxes, you know, the anti-abortion kind of faith-based politics, and then the more left-leaning version of that on the other side. But at least we're defining the debate in a way that it can be productive rather than just faith and no faith as it's been for so many years. So I think this is not only a historic election because of who's running, I think it's a historic election because, in a sense, it's an election in which there's a referendum on what the Founding Fathers intended for religion and government in the first place. And it's going to be a wild ride. I'm glad to be in the middle of it.
I am too, and we're looking forward to seeing how it all plays out. We appreciate your contribution through this book. Stephen, it's always great to talk to you. Look forward to reading the book, The Faith of Barack Obama. It's coming soon, and go pick up a copy. I mean, even if you don't plan on voting for the man, go pick up a copy. It'll be well worth your time. Stephen, thanks very much.
Always great to be with you, Tom. God bless.